Welcome to SILRAP Podcasts. You are about to listen to a service of the Center for International Law Research and Policy.
I have the privilege to be the last speaker before tea time. And thinking in the way Jeremy Bentham thought, you could go along like this. In everything you do, you should balance, calculate the proportion of pain you inflict and the proportion of pleasure. So if I said I cancel my speech, maybe that would be in the spirit of Bentham. But I will not do that. I will inflict some pain, but hopefully in the longer run it will be happiness also. Bentham is a little bit different from many of the thinkers we have been discussing today. He is definitely not a fan of religion, and he is not a fan of natural law and natural rights. And the reasons are quite obvious if you read Bentham. He's very clear about what the problem is with these ideas. But my main point will not be to outline all his criticisms. I will say a little bit about it, but I'm more fascinated about the visionary Bentham, which, guided by this principle of the greatest happiness for the greatest number, came up with some interesting perspectives. Benthamite concerns, if we can call them that, still have some relevance for current debates and efforts to develop international criminal law, but mostly, I would say, to be influenced in lawmaking in each and every state by what you could call a model legislation. Because that was what Bentham used most of his time. It was to reform by giving proposals to legislators, not only in England. He was very frustrated about the English reluctance, conservatism, you can call it what you want, but in other countries like France and in some Latin American countries, he even went to Russia to try to influence them to have reforms. And that is maybe something a little bit parallel about how international institutions functions today. I have to be honest, my own motivation is that I am a big fan of international criminal law. I have worked for almost my entire working life related to human rights, first more in an academic context, but I felt I should be more out in the field. So I have been in Rwanda observing the efforts to reconcile and to try those who took part in the genocide in 1994. I've been in Bosnia and seen what war crimes have done there. I have been in Georgia, which actually is now the exception for the ICC. It's not true anymore that ICC is only in African countries. ICC is conducting an investigation in Georgia related to the situation of the 2008 war there. And my organization is trying to be helpful in that investigation because there are a lot of challenges. And one of them is, of course, that the Russian Federation was part of that war. So this is maybe some of the key things to know about Jeremy Bentham. I think he was eccentric. And I think it's John Stuart Mill who said that great nations have a great place for eccentric people because they are innovative. And this is an innovative man. Thanks to Jeremy Bentham, we have the term international law. He invented that term. He also invented a lot of other terms, like codification of unwritten laws. He was a big fan of codification. A big problem with English law was exactly it was not codified. Maximization, minimization, and a lot of other terms. He was a great reform proposer of legislation, of principles for good government, how to improve the ways laws were drafted and enacted, on how to effectively fight corruption in government and on how to improve the economy. And he had a lot of things to say about judges and lawyers, which he felt was using their position not to spread happiness, but to maintain their own position, high position. This is the man. And you can actually go to London and see the man because he designed for the preservation of his body. I've not done that, but there is a possibility. He was a very sympathetic and empathic man. He even inspired animal rights movements today because he cared for everything living. So when you hear about his moral principles, don't think that this is a man without feelings. But he proposed an ethical doctrine where feelings play a less role. He wanted to establish a scientific approach to legislation and morals. He was much inspired by the scientific advances of his time in natural sciences, in medical sciences, and also in exploring the earth. But he said that legislation and morals need a solid foundation, like a scientific principle. And he was very frustrated over lack of progress for his reform proposals in England. And that was one of the reasons that he became, from his utilitarian starting points, a Democrat, thinking that this political elite, which made his reform proposals being shelved, they needed to be challenged by the people. And there had to be transparency. So what they were doing could be known by all subjects, in principle. He was amazingly before his time in some subjects. For instance, in the equality of sexes, universal suffrage, decolonization. Remember, he lived on a time when the British Empire was very active, for instance, in this part of the world. He even proposed to decriminalize homosexuality. There were no majority for this any place in the world at his time. Reading Bentham is quite hard. He is dry, he's very detailed, very methodic. Some call him scholastic. And that was not meant as a good thing to say about him. But this is quite a nice quotation of Bentham. Nature has placed mankind under the governance of two sovereign masters, pain and pleasure. This is something called individual hedonism or psychological hedonism. But look carefully, he both says that this is a fact. And that this should be how human beings are guided. And the interesting thing is that this not should only be a principle for individuals. He thinks this should be a principle for legislation and for governments. So in a way, trading away self-interest for a wider consideration of the well-being you produce and the sorrow you produce. I'm in line with Bentham to use different words because he used a lot of different words for pleasure and pain. I think 48, I'm not sure. But he used a lot of words to explain that pleasure and pain can be very many different things. It can be direct, physical, but it can also be psychological. It can be in the pleasure you feel when you read a good book or a good judgment. Very wide application of the principle. And remember, he was inspired by Isaac Newton and by the Swedish botanist, in finding one key. And he thought he had for one key to finding a firm foundation for morals, politicals, and legislation. And it should be a guide for human action in every situation, and in particular in that of a functionary or a set of functionaries exercising the powers of government. I like these kind of formulations in Bentham. Bentham was obviously inspired by Hobbes and his concept of law. He nevertheless belonged to a liberal tradition according to which liberty is understood as freedom from, absence or restraint from interference, from society and from rulers. So from the point of view of the principle of utility, the greatest happiness, liberty is positive because it provides you with happiness. A free person is a happy person. While law is negative because it takes that freedom and restricts it. But law is nevertheless necessary. And law can also produce happiness, more happiness than pain. And according to Bentham, we should stop talking about natural law and natural rights. He wrote at least two books about that. And one of them is Anarchical Fallacies, trying to describe, and it's hard to see that he has really good arguments, that natural rights is the reason for revolutionary chaos, anarchy, etc. I think Hart, the big English philosopher of law, has a point when he said that it seems that Bentham realized that the doctrine of rights is his strongest competition. So we saw that in a way as a threat to his own success and the principle of utility, because he clearly exaggerates the negative sides. We heard about Blackstone earlier today, and that was the favorite subject of criticism for Bentham. Everything Blackstone said was wrong. Because Blackstone accepted the state of affairs in the English common law system, and that led to a lot of misery, and it maintained status quo, this elite of so-called legal experts who could do whatever they want. And this was against reform. So he advanced a critique of the English common law as the exclusive domain of the professional elite, lawyers and judges, in which often obscure and technical language was used to keep the law shrouded in mystery from the point of view of ordinary citizens. I think this criticism is still valid many places. And he held, like Hobbes, that unless the language of law and the methods used to interpret it were accessible and useful to the ordinary citizens to whom it applied, law would remain ineffectual as a guide to their behavior. So he said that the high crime level in England, and he said it's the highest crime level in Europe, it's partly caused by the misery of the common law. And he called this, this is the funny part of Bentham, he invents a lot of strong language. He called it dog law. And the meaning is that judges, according to him, develop legal doctrines on a case-by-case basis. And this is not capable of guiding people what they can do or cannot do. Exactly like a man who punishes his dog without telling the dog how to avoid being punished in the future. So that was why he called it dog law. The solution, because Bentham held that it's not enough to criticize. You have to come up with something better. codification of laws based on the principle of utility. And if you want to learn more about that, read Bentham. He has a lot of very practical proposals how that can be done. Laws should be drafted in a language which explains legal fictions. And legal rights is a legal fiction. It means the following, in his way of paraphrasing. If someone has a right, someone has a duty to fulfill that right. If someone has a duty and he doesn't fulfill that duty, he can be sanctioned. He can be punished. And by being punished, he will feel pain. So that's the way he takes law into a very concrete level. The most interesting thing about Bentham, I feel, is his universal jurisprudence. Model legislation for any state with liberal opinion. And based on his theories about how legal language should be, he made a lot of proposals. In a little bit similar way as the Council of Europe or the United Nations experts come up with advice on legal matters today. I will skip this because I don't have a lot of time. I would say that he continued the model of seeing laws as commands backed by threats by the sovereign, but he modeled this also a little bit different, and he made more space for an interactional relationship between citizens and the sovereign. So that's something I read more about in my paper. And he clearly was an inspiration for Hart, when Hart said that law is a social construction. That you can already find in Bentham. Created a term of international law, but had a quite limited definition of international law. And this is the interesting thing about Bentham also. He was Eurocentric. He thought about the European countries, England, France, maybe to a less extent Germany, as the civilizers of the world. But at the same time, he had to be honest and faithful to the principle of utility, which creates equality. Bentham actually proposed in four essays published after he died that there should be created a world court. That court was mostly along preventing war lines. But there are interesting elements which could mean that he also thought about preventing other types of crimes, not only crimes against peace. And in describing the work of the court, he faithfully applies his principle of utility. He had a very positive view about what law can achieve. If it's clear, if it is understandable, and if it is faithful to the principle of the happiness of the greatest number. How will this world court function? Well, it will not be one neutral person, it will be representatives of the states sitting there. And it will start with very measured measures. Reporting on the court's opinion in a conflict between states, circulating that opinion to each state and inside the states to create a favorably public reaction. So this is about outreach. But there is also a harder side of it. Yeah, 2 minutes.
2 minutes, 5 plus 2, 7.
Yeah. Okay, there is also a doctrine for humanitarian intervention in his proposal. So what is Bentham's legacy? Bentham is interpreted in many ways. And some used almost all the time to attack him for attacking natural rights. But I think he should be remembered for the term international law, his proposal of formation of a legislative alliance among all civilized nations to further international law, for his underlining of the need for a world institution to enforce international law, and thereby strengthening the law-like quality of international law and preventing crime and war. But also for his universal jurisprudence, a model legislation which states could learn from and adopt. He insists that laws, judgments, and other legal texts should be written in a language understandable. And I would argue that his application of the principle of utility on international law issues may give as a consequence that sometimes state sovereignty has to yield to overriding considerations, such as peace and the greatest happiness. The principle of utility also leads to another important conclusion. The legitimacy and authority of international criminal law and international and internationalized jurisdictions is not only dependent on whether norms and orders are abided with. That is, of course, very important. But there is also a test related to the consequences of norms and actions for affected communities and individuals. In a way, Bentham and his followers take away protection of natural law norms as a justification for international criminal law. In its place, they put the principle of utility and make a balanced assessment of the effects of law and legal practice in terms of happiness or some other beneficial end result for those affected. In such assessments, they will not only take into account the way jurisdictions deal with situations and cases in legal terms, but also how issues such as reparations, witness protection, outreach, and other activities that may have an effect on the overall balance of happiness and pain of those affected are performed. And this, I think, is one of the big challenges of international jurisdictions. I could speak also about Mill and John Austin and the great legal philosopher H.L.A. Hart. They are all very much inspired by Bentham, but you have to read the chapter to find out. Thank you.
Thank you for listening. For more open access audio recordings, films, and publications, go to silrap.org.